Good morning and welcome to WMFO. That's WMFO in Medford. Tufts Freeform, commercial free, community based radio. I'm messing up my slogans here. And thank you. And we're going to switch gears here and go from mostly music and talk to talk and music. Mostly talk, some music. And this is Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. I'll be your host today, Jeff, with co-host
Diego.
Diego, back from a it's been traumatic. do we want to go into all the details about why
working class is someone's going through
illegal detention in Houston? Yeah. let's see, what else? Yeah, Diego, what was
just
it?
Just keeping my head up.
May 1st protest, and they rounded up everybody in Houston, Texas.
Yeah, but that,
Thank you so much.
A little further than that. It was more of based on, you know, the illegal immigration, the big persecution, I would like to call it, of Latinos in basically all of Texas, which is a worse state for Latinos to be in right now.
Yep.
Especially Mexicans.
Worse than California? Because, like...
Oh, it's up there, but it's worse than California in
the
sense
that... Wow, that's bad,
then. You're dealing with a lot of Southern type, you know, kind of like going back into what Martin Luther King was going through.
The Confederate flag and all the... Hey, any monuments fall lately? Because I'm for taking down...
Oh, the Sam Houston statue might have fallen. I hope so.
I'm for taking down every Confederate monument, putting it in a closet somewhere, and letting all the right-wingers cry their tears.
Away our history.
No, we're not. Not at all. We're going to talk about that history. We're going to talk just not ways you don't like.
You know? I'm just giving you their reflections.
Nah, I know. So, May 1st protest in Houston, you and a lot of other comrades got rounded up by the cops. Was it some sort of kettling thing? You know what kettling means? Where they just take a whole group regardless of who's there.
Big buses coming in. Yeah. Let's go, go, go. You know,
They started that in New York back in the...
Felt like... You ever seen Children of Men?
Love that
round
movie.
You up in these
Love that
buses.
Movie.
Would get,
yeah.
I felt like that whole, you know.
Yep.
England... Immigrants.
Yeah, no, that's a brilliant film. Science fiction film, Children of Men. If you haven't seen it, please rent that sucker, because even though it's science fiction, it's completely...
It is fascism at its best, or should I say worst, for us.
Yeah, completely relevant to now, you know. I mean, just the best kind of science fiction. Based on a novel that was written a while ago, which is interesting, but it was really changed a lot by... What's the director's Cuarón, I believe, Mexican... director who's quite well known, Alfonso Cuarón. I think so.
It's been a while, but
yeah, I don't know.
I felt like that scene when they're, you know, he's driving with Mike Caine, whatever it was, that English British
Michael Caine, famous Michael Caine,
and
been in everything.
And that bus is riding right by them, and you just see these hopeless people like this on the, you know.
Yeah,
like,
that was incredible. Yeah, I mean, Diego's back.
Only it's heat. A lot of heat.
After that trauma of illegal detention, which they've now dropped all the charges and everything, right?
Yeah.
They had nothing. The reason I mentioned off air...
And being up here, it's just like, well, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, the lawyer argued in the sense of, we're not in like a Soviet type of thing where, you know, he can't leave a certain section of towards another one.
Internal passport thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He can travel wherever, you know?
Yeah. By the way, that exists in a lot of countries, unfortunately. Didn't just exist under Stalinism. But, Diego, also, you were working a lot, you said, right? You were doing two jobs, and now...
I was, but then...
you got a steady gig right now? Yeah.
Steady. Okay. One job that I had part-time.
Yeah.
I went full-time. He was about to hire somebody else. And then the morning shifts I couldn't do at the other job because my mother had knee surgery.
Oh, yeah. How's she doing now?
She's doing real good. Yeah, the therapy is... She's actually walking better than me.
Well, today's your birthday,
right? She's 70.
Today's your birthday.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have to say the age.
39.
That's a good age. I think that's a great age. Congratulations. Happy birthday.
I survived. Capitalism.
39 years. I is surviving. The other thing you were saying was that working a lot, getting over that illegal arrest, but you got some reading done, you said, relevant to the show.
We're in a centurium or a century later of the famous October Revolution, exactly, Lenin and Trotsky, before it was smudged and purged by Stalin.
the mass Soviets, the mass workers' councils. And you were reading, what'd you say off air?
Tariq Ali.
What's that called? Lenin.
Lenin, the dilemma.
And then also.
And it has a sub.
Permanent Revolution by Trotsky. Leon Trotsky. And
Russian Populism of the Late 19th Century by Franco Venturi, I think is.
Yeah. And then there's the one I recommended that I started to read. A friend of mine at work lent it to me, but I never, I have to say I've only gotten through two pages. I've been so busy with a lot of political organizing and stuff and keeping my job and all that. It's called October by China Mieville, and we have, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He's English, but he's got a French last name, and which would be Mieville or Mieville, I don't know. Anyway. So, October by China Mieville. It's gotten some press, and the alternative press at least, gotten some notoriety is the wrong word. It's gotten some notice. And
I'm also reading.
It's out there, and we're gonna report on that in the show more.
Started to read this little book that the prisoner, what's his name? The political prisoner, African American.
Oh, yeah, Soledad Brother, George Jackson. No, from the Black Panthers? No, sorry.
No, recent. He's still in prison.
Obama. I'm not sorry, Obama. No. Why did I say Obama? That was silly.
Jamal's.
Yeah. Abdul. This is crazy. I've been on protest to get him out of prison in Philly.
Yeah. He wrote a book called Black. When did Black, like putting up a question, when did Black Lives Ever Matter?
Yeah, I didn't know about that book.
Yeah,
all right.
It's a real good one.
Yeah.
It's fairly new. It's not that big.
Yeah.
But you really get into it. He's really breaking down. Jim Crow and, you know, the history and up till now.
I have an article here that I want to refer to and also just turn people on to in general. A website called Black Agenda Report. They have some really good... Have you ever heard of it?
Yes.
Yeah, Black Agenda Report with Glenn Ford and others. I mentioned on the show before, but I just want to remind people about it. It's very
He's the one
excellent.
Who was really critical during the Obama administration.
Yes, everybody is rah-rah.
Yeah.
No, it's truly...
breaking down the...
Truly a progressive... left-wing, you know, Marxist-inspired website, not a liberal kind of, you know, Jesse Jackson type thing or whatever. Like, you know, just no. It's very much about changing things fundamentally in order to get black liberation, and it's really some really good stuff in it. And I found an article I really like that I'll hopefully mention later. It's kind of a response to. What is it, Ta-Nehisi Coates, am I saying his name correctly, who writes for The Atlantic a lot, but from a very liberal perspective, not trying to change anything, really. And we'll hopefully get to that. We have a lot to talk about today. By the way, speaking of where you've been and so on recently, this goes back a little further, but your old, remember we used to not mention the name, dance around the name of Whole Paycheck?
Yeah, I can care less.
No. We can still keep
whole
it.
Amazon.
I was going to say that. Amazon took it over. We haven't talked since that. Amazon took
it's
it over.
It's funny because I used to tell people, you know, one day, I don't know, it might look like a joke or something. You guys might laugh, but Walmart or some other conglomerate can just, you know, emerge or take us over, sure enough.
You were saying that Walmart. When you worked there at Whole Paycheck.
Yeah. Walmart and then Amazon. Those two are bending, right?
So you got
those
it.
Two are between those two.
Amazon's more powerful now, that's my understanding. But yeah, they're up there. They're the top 10, definitely. You hit it. You hit it on the head. That's right. I always laughed.
That was based on my dialectical materialism. You know,
exactly.
Marx.
Exactly.
You know, I always, one thing merges into another monstrous, exploitative, not good for us.
The tendency towards monopolization. As a feature of capitalism is proven again and again.
But I heard they dropped the price on salmon.
You know, I was in there.
I'm like, that's what I want.
I was
want
in there the
salmon,
other day to get organic lettuce. I buy like three things. I go in there and walk out. It's really, they look at me. I buy like three things, you know, and it's still too much money. And sometimes I don't go there. Some weeks I don't go there at all. I just can't handle it. But the one I go to off and on, they have dropped prices, but it's a joke. They, you know, it's just like something was really overpriced, and now it's slightly overpriced or still overpriced.
Yeah.
So no, you can't get out the door without spending the paycheck still. But if you buy anything, what they have done though is they've cut back on their choices. You know, they've narrowed down what they sell. Sort of like if you've ever been to a Trader Joe's.
I used to work there.
Yeah. I used to work there too. I forgot about that. Okay, that's right. You used to stack, right?
2006, huh?
Used to stack. Used to do the
overnight.
Yeah. So, you know that they have like a they have like usually the same products and usually you know and that's it. So narrow narrow range.
Trader Joe's.
Yeah. Yep. Whole Paycheck seems to be doing that now. Narrowing the range of products they have.
More of their products versus.
I don't know. That's a good point. Yeah, yeah. I didn't notice that. Maybe. Yeah, probably more of theirs. And but
well, they
still
were trying
really
to do the 365 stores where you're just 365. That's it. All their product, nothing else coming in, just theirs.
Yeah.
And it's for the lower income places like Detroit. I wonder how that's working out.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't know about that. The thing about the Amazon takeover is like I was hearing. Oh, they're gonna take them over. Then it's still up in the air, and now it seems like it really happened, and I haven't researched it enough to discover if it's definitely a done deal yet, but it looks like it is. So I think I even saw the name Amazon in one of the in the store that I go to.
Yeah.
And but you were saying, which more important to the show in terms of you know the conditions of working people is when you first got hired, there was all that you know propaganda there about it's a good great place to work and they hired you full time.
Blah blah blah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, also whole you know green capitalism, all that stuff. The guy wrote a book about his unique model,
conscious capitalism.
So when they got taken over by Amazon, I was like, what a joke!
What happened
on top
to your
of the
conscious,
joke
sir?
Is the second joke. No, but I mean being taken over is the typical capitalist thing that happens to every corporation practically sooner or later. So it's not like. Anything unique about Whole Foods? They did the same old, you know, as far as that goes. Yeah. Also, you know, the more that you'd research them, the stuff they did to the products, like wax the apples and do this stuff, it wasn't that as healthy as they claim and blah, blah, blah. I don't want to go on all day about Whole Paycheck, but I'm just saying, like, the main point is that what I started to say is, like and you've mentioned on the show, that when you were first hired, it was like full time, a lot of propaganda about the mission, right? So called mission. And then, And like this mix of sick time, vacation time, blah blah. And then the longer you were there, the more they kept taking that stuff away or using it against you somehow.
We had bonuses, you know. Yeah. I was like, I remember my first year there. Looked at my check around Christmas time. There was like a bonus. Oh, we did these amount. There was profit. They call it gain sharing. And it was an extra like literally $350 or something.
And what happened to that later on?
Oh, down the road, every year, just like, where's my gain sharing? Because, you know, you get my expectations up, and all of a sudden, every year, it's like going down, down, down. Yeah. I only got 50.
Yeah.
I got nothing. What happened? I looked at the sales. It was plenty of money.
Yeah. In Worcester, where I've been mostly helping to
and
order.
And they formulate a different formula. No, we do it this way. It depends on labor. It depends on this. It's just another way of, nope.
In Worcester, where I've been helping to organize lately, last couple of years, there was we're trying to help the local labor movement to make it stronger, more democratic in our own way through Socialist Alternative. And so somebody told me about at a school, the resident assistants. This is very interesting because it's like the students basically, but they have like this job as watching over a dorm or whatever, or floor of a dorm. They basically tried to organize and the university threw some money at them. And I immediately thought of that and thought, I don't think that's going to be over fully, because the person that told me about it said, well, that kind of chilled out the drive.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I don't know about that, because I've been involved in union organizing campaigns where when they throw, including at Harvard, when I helped organize the union at Harvard, the clerical workers union back in the late 80s, they threw money at us, and we would be like, we'd immediately take our paycheck and go to the people that we normally organize and said, look, this is what Harvard has done now because of the union drive. Think what we can get if we are successful in getting the union in.
What, they give you more money in the check?
Yeah, they tried to buy us off. And one time they tried to do it, they singled out, because it was purely merit pay. There was no guarantee of a raise working at Harvard before the union for the clerical and technical workers. So one year, after giving a broad-based merit raise the year before, more than they usually give, I said that's only because of the union drive. And that argument worked with a lot of people, by the way. Let me just finish the story. Mm-hmm. Then the next year, they targeted the union activists, myself included, gave us very large raises, like 15%, because that was going to buy us off. We did the same thing. We went around and said, I got a 15% raise. How come you only got like 5%? You know, this is they're just trying to buy us off. One play us one off another, buy us off. Let's just get the union in, and we'll do better. And we did the first contract, at least we did better, and subsequent contracts overall did a lot better. just didn't live up to its potential, as I've mentioned on the show before. But that's, you know, throwing money at workers to bribe them off doesn't always work for corporations, because then the workers think, well, like, we can get more if we unionize. That didn't happen a whole paycheck yet, but yeah. Actually, and then they also gave away. Sorry, go ahead.
It's interesting you said that, because 2009, prior to me getting employed, they were giving all these good gain sharing programs and stuff, because they were gonna unionize some stores.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was a big drive.
Yeah.
In 2009, that was during the time of Shaw's strike, and I was working at Shaw's. And remember?
Yep, I remember.
And
great recession.
During that whole thing. Yep, recession, all that. It's all material, dialectical materialism, right? So I said to myself, yep, as soon as they give us these bonuses and we're content, you know, it'll start going right back down. They take back
concessions. Were people really content, though?
Yeah.
They were? The workers. They were like, we don't need a union anymore because of that money?
Yeah, there was no talk of union after that.
Well,
I got in there around 2010.
So. Yeah, well, the thing is, though, I think the union drive might have failed for other reasons, but maybe you're right. Maybe that chilled it.
Oh, I'm happy with this. You know, if we get a union in here, they'll take that away. That whole propaganda. That was their thing. That was the way I've had workers tell me. Oh, we've had meetings where they were very anti-union. Lord forbid you could get fired, blah, 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 all that kind of.
I've been involved in many, many union campaigns and contract struggles, and if you get a first contract, that's not guaranteed, especially nowadays, but if you get a first contract, you never go backwards. You always start where you start negotiations at what the workers have. And management even concedes on that. Management doesn't open up a first contract saying, oh, we're going to take all these things away. It just doesn't happen. What they do now is they just refuse to negotiate in good faith. They just refuse to negotiate that first contract. They just drag it out. And if the union's not strong enough to make them settle, there's no first contract. That unfortunately happens in a lot of places now. So you have like say one of the unions that should organize Whole Foods, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, they go around sometimes and organize smaller stores, or, you know, not even food stores, but, you know, like stores. Like, remember, yeah. They actually organized that theater in Cambridge, the Kendall Square, one time. They actually had a majority, signed the cards, everything. It was
the cinema.
It was supposed to be union, but they never got a first contract, so it never became a union.
They're remodeling, aren't they, right now, I heard?
I haven't been down there in so long. I don't have money
it's
or time
down.
To go to the
movies.
I don't
know what they're doing.
No, it's still there, but it's in the back of a building. They're building in front of it, I heard. Okay. Maybe you're right. Maybe your information's better, because I just haven't been down there at all. I don't go to the movies much anymore, although I did see that new Blade Runner movie. No, the new Blade Runner movie has kind of political subtext. Because a French director, French writer, it's not Ridley Scott and the usual company. And
Children of Men was like the 21st century Blade Runner, you know, that when they got
really,
the reviews.
Really, they said that? Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Some
really?
Of the reviews is like, this is our 21st century Blade Runner.
No. That's not a good analogy. But they're both good. Yeah, New York. yeah.
Review. Oh, I also saw Blade Runner of the 21st century.
Yeah. Anyway, so today's show, getting into the nitty-gritty, welcome back again, Diego.
Thank you.
And maybe Tom will come back and co-host once in a while.
he's chained to the desk, so to speak.
Shout out to Tom. So anyway, Tomrad, as they say. So elections are coming up in a lot of places Tuesday, these off-year elections that don't really, a lot of cities gather much interest. Have you been following the Boston one, the mayoral race in Boston? Two Democrats running. Not much to vote for there at all. But some of the criticisms coming out are interesting. But what struck me about it is like the total lack of history. You know, like even Jackson, the Democrat that's running against Walsh. He is attacking Walsh on the school system, on, you know, problems with the Boston school system, which is true, although Jackson's proposals don't really offer much. He stays sort of within the Democratic Party liberal paradigm. But the thing with Walsh is that, and even Jackson attacking him on it, is they don't go back to, there's been two or three rounds of school closings within the last 10 years in Boston. They don't mention the first two, you know what I mean? And then they talk about how...
That's the one we were fighting against.
Twice.
Of libraries.
Yep.
And
there have been two. And but what has come out in this election, this is one reason I'm bringing it up, is that Boston is... Remember we used to talk about when we were fighting the school closings, we were talking about how horrible it is that Boston School Committee is not elected? Because they would just come to these hearings and just sit there, no matter what people said, mm-hmm. they didn't even care. They would sometimes say something back, sometimes they wouldn't. And they'd have a line of cops there just ready to arrest people. Oh, you're out of line, you're going too far, arrest, blah, blah, blah. And so it was a joke. You know, they were not accountable. They know that unless you got rid of the mayor, you couldn't really change anything in Boston. It's a strong mayor city, as they call it. And Menino used to be the, you know, sort of mayoral dictator. As a Democrat, by the way, and Walsh, mayoral dictator, as a Democrat, by the way. And all that the city council can do is call hearings or reject budgets. And the way that Menino dealt with the budget rejection, which is the same way Walsh will, is he just kept bringing back the same budget. Just keep bringing it back and saying that, oh, city council's blocking the budget. And then everyone hates the city council because there's not enough money for anything, even like basic stuff. And they win the budget they want. So the mayor runs the show. And I don't know if you follow Walsh at all, by the way, but he channels Menino. He talks really, really fast. In a Boston accent, heavy Boston accent, and just throws out palliatives, just throws out crumbs to people.
It was like that demonstration.
And
they had.
Hope they just feel okay. Oh, this guy's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that demonstration they had. As long as we can do it in peace and order, blah, 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 blah. You have the right to protest, but blah, 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 blah. I'm like.
By the way, were you at that? Did you make it to that?
I was in the Roxbury side coming in.
Me too.
From Roxbury
too.
Community. Yeah. But it was so vast, so many people.
Yeah. 40,000. Yeah, we had a big social
couple
convention.
Neo-Nazis got snatched right into the alley because they were trying to break it up on my section.
Oh, God. Good luck.
No, they got... Literally got like that.
Yeah, no, that's good.
That situation
that's
in good. The '80s.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah, oh yeah, I remember that. what Diego's referring to is that 40,000 response to the neo Nazis and the fascists coming into Boston was not the first time that's happened. There was one in 1981, I think it was, or 80 or 81, maybe 82. I think it was 81, where 5,000 people showed up. Within a few days' notice, just everyone's calling everyone, myself included. I was a student at the time, and to show up and these neo Nazis had announced on some Rhode Island television show they were going to go to Boston and organize, and they were going to start with a rally in Government Center. So they showed up under police protection. 5,000 of us surrounded them. They got out of their little police van for about 3 or 4 seconds, please shove them. Well, there was like this sound like, remember, this is the way I always tell the story. There's a sound like a whoosh. Like I never saw anything like it. Like everyone just did the same thing at once, which was charge. It was like, woof. It was like, woof. And the police just, I never saw a cop so scared in their lives. They just like looked at the whoosh sound, threw the Nazis back, literally threw them into the thing, shoved the door, pounded on the thing. The thing took off, right? The police thing took off. And we're like dancing. We're celebrating. The cops were pissed. They don't like being like, you know, losing.
Outnumbered.
They don't like that. So they charged us like, I don't know, 5 times back and forth. And some people didn't end up getting arrested. And I was just running back and forth with my friend from school. I always add to the story. I thought
were you in BU at that time?
Yeah. I thought he got shot, you know, because I heard this bang and he fell right when the bang happened. I was like, I was really freaking out. And he's like, no, I'm fine. I just tripped. And I'm like, Jesus. You know, we get up and run, keep running. It was kind of funny, but it was sad that the cops wasted like all that time and hurt people too, actually. I don't know if anyone got seriously hurt, but like, why charge the crowd? We won. It was our space. Go away.
You know? Well, this one was just somewhat, so you had these guys, Trump supporters, ready to go on a thing. Once they seen that vast of humanity
they left.
Just went, okay, I think we should just walk out of here now. That look in it was so priceless. I wish I had a camera.
Yeah.
I was, that look in their face is like,
there's a lot of people coming.
Okay, we should like start heading home now.
You know what happened to us? We had a big socialist contingent, literally like 1,000, 2,000 people in Roxbury. We started in Roxbury in front of Reggie Lewis Center. And by the time we got to the common, they were gone already. The neo-Nazis were already gone. That's how long it took. There's so many people, you know? So this is a long, long march. And, you know, it could have been shorter, but I think the cops messed with us a little bit. And I think the marchers weren't so clear on how to get us through. The leaders of the march so clear on how to get us through fast, you know, or faster. But it was powerful. It was very powerful. Then you get to the common, and you realize they're gone, right? Like word got out, they're gone. You know, I was talking to everyone, and so I'm like, I went to a social alternative table, which was actually quite good. People were very interested. There were a bunch of them out there. But on my way, I saw something happen like you're describing, where some kid mouthed off or something, and he must have been a right winger that just got lost or something. And immediately, like, people surrounded him, were pushing him and stuff. And then there were people defending him, you know, that, you know, and just, it was just crazy, you know. And he shut up, though. he didn't repeat whatever the stupid thing is that he said.
Yeah, we're not in Houston, you know?
Yeah, well, Houston. You know, I like I said earlier, I think off air, I was like, I remembered your situation in Houston, getting arrested for nothing on May 1st, and then I asked, did you sue?
And throughout, San Antonio.
Are you suing the state of Texas? Are you suing?
My lawyer said good luck on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you should be, though. I mean, but anyway, I know it limits the resources. But what I was going to say is I just came across another example of that, and there's many, many of them. Of people being, there was St. Louis recently. There was big Black Lives Matter protests in St. Louis within the last month or so. And they were doing that thing, kettling, that we mentioned earlier in the show, where the cops would surround an entire area and anyone within that area would be arrested regardless of whether they are part of the protest or not. That happened in New York a lot during the anti-war protests of the mid-2000s against Iraq. Yeah, I was part of that, and Social Alternative was part of that, and there was a kettling thing going on. First time we'd heard of it was at smaller demonstrations around that time, and then the big demonstration of 500,000 in New York, they successfully kind of weakened by a strategy. The cops would use a strategy of their version of kettling in New York, where they have a ton of cops, is block by block, they would section off with police blocking the street and or surrounding it, so you'd be in like a rectangle, like a square, a big square or a rectangle, and if you left, they wouldn't let you back in. This is the key point. They wouldn't let you back in. So think about the march would keep losing people as they went to go to the bathroom and find out what was going on. The cops would stop the march for no reason. Someone would leave to want to keep going. They'd end up on the sidewalk. They actually end up as many people on the sidewalk as in the streets. And once once you're on the sidewalk in New York, you're just part of the throng of people that are there at any given moment, you know, depending on where you are. And this was in a busy part of the city. So, I saw people. I went into a restaurant, a small diner type place, and it was just filled with protesters, really dejected and demoralized because they'd been kept away from their group and they couldn't. They didn't see what going on the sidewalk would do. And then once the different squares or kettles, so to speak, on the street were diminished in numbers, then the cops would just attack, just to have their little fun. Just
they used to do that in El Salvador before the revolution, the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was a student at the time,
mm-hmm.
and this is in the 60s.
Yep,
where they were bought, like, you know, oh, we got them all here now, mm-hmm. and they start. You'll see snipers from, you don't know where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So it's that happened in St. Louis recently with Black Lives Matter protests. They cracked down really hard, didn't get much national exposure. And then more recently, I just heard of some people just getting arrested, an individual. I can't remember the details. I'm sorry. And I'm just like, this is so common, this like arbitrary arrest for no reason. It's just, you know, this is, you know, everyone's talking about the militarization of the police and so on. And they get at some of the problems with that, obvious problems of violence and people being killed and so on. But there's also the problem of just arbitrary arrest on a constant basis. And they call it the freest country in the world and all that. And it's just not true. Sorry, just not true. By the way, we started to talk about Election Day. We mentioned Boston a little bit. There's elections happening all over the country. And there are socialists running for, like, independents running for election here and there. And one, a member of Social Alternative is running for city council in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And there are some interesting things going on with that campaign. Minneapolis, you don't think of as a city where there's a big housing crisis, but like every major city, there is, right? There's homelessness, there shouldn't be. There's rents growing. There's developers and real estate companies trying to gentrify wherever they can. So,
Somerville's one of them right now.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Totally. Somerville's been that way for a while. Torn long down, time.
And tomorrow the condominium is already putting. Yep. Like, oh, that was quick.
Yep.
But for a school, you take a couple of years to make, if not more.
Somerville's been gentrifying for a long time. Yep.
It's like it was there. It was nothing there. Now it's up. What's going on? It's like literally months.
Yeah, you know, I checked out the Somerville elections a little bit. I didn't see anybody. See, there's some people that run as, they call themselves socialists. They're in DSA or whatever, but they don't run as socialists. They don't run for office as open socialists. They don't talk about it. They don't put forward a program that's any different from the Democrats. And that's a big problem as well. But what I'm talking about, a real socialist, Ginger Jensen, member of Social Alternative, running for city council in Minneapolis. Here, I'm going to reference a couple articles, one in The Nation from November 2nd and one from socialistalternative.org November 3rd. And the thing that's interesting is that that $15 minimum wage was won recently in Minneapolis. Unfortunately, the Democrats got a hold of it towards the end of the process, and they put in a long phase-in period it's past 2020, I believe. But it is going to help workers, some workers in the interim as it goes up towards that phase-in, that final phase-in. And it's a step in the right direction. And the media, the corporate media, whenever you get 15 in a city, they don't look at the details, really. They just say 15 is one. So that could actually be a good thing in some ways, unfortunately. But I wish they would pay more attention to the details. In any case, Ginger Jensen and Social Alternative led that fight through an organization called 15 Now. And we won 15. And then Ginger's running for mayor now as a member of Social Alternative and as a socialist, open socialist. And, of course, the powers that be hate us. So the biggest corporate paper in Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, which usually endorses Republicans and Democrats, they went out of their way to say anybody but Ginger Jensen in the ward she's running in. She's running in Ward 3. And they basically said, you know, because we're talking putting forward tax the rich, rent control, you know, challenge corporate power, stuff like that. Basically, kind of things that a socialist would put forward as an interim, you know, transitional type demands. And so they're actually endorsing every other candidate. There's three other candidates in the ward. So Ginger Jensen and the campaign were like celebrating that. Actually, there was another thing that happened where, you know what, the PACs, you know, political action committees, is a way
it's this big money,
bundle up,
right?
money from big business and so on. So this Republican PAC, two or three of them actually, have been giving big money to this campaign, over $100,000, to support one of Ginger's opponents, who was a Republican, now says he's a Democrat and is running in that ward. So they're giving a lot of money to him, and they're putting out these general mailers where they say Ginger is nuts, she's crazy, stuff like this. Yeah, it's very old school trashing, you know, old school name calling. But backed by a lot of money.
Slander.
Very glossy, yeah, very glossy money. Very glossy mailing, and a lot of money behind it, a lot of slander. And we're doing our own mailings. There's mailings coming from the campaign. But the point is that they did a rally. The campaign, Ginger Jensen's campaign, did a rally at the headquarters of one of these companies that's behind the pack, which I thought was really clever, and invited all the other candidates to do that. Only one showed up. None of the other candidates in that ward or any ward would show up to that except for one, to show, you know, the influence of corporate money, to show up the influence of corporate money in the process. So anyway, I turn our listeners on to especially an article called Ginger Jensen's Socialist Campaign Catches Fire in Minneapolis, November 3rd, 2017. Give you an example, like the Shama Sawant campaign, which we've often talked about, we have some news about, what it's like for a real socialist to run for office. And the good news is that the Shama Sawant campaigns, because she was elected and reelected with even more votes second time around, and I was there for the help on the ground with the second reelection, with the reelection, sorry. One advantage socialist candidates clearly have in the new era.
The deeds as opposed to the talk.
Well, that, but also the volunteers. One thing, when I was in Seattle, and we would huddle up for a night of door knocking, an evening of door knocking, our crowd of volunteers, myself included, was always much, much larger than the either non-existent or, like, literally there's a few people of the main opponent at that time to Shama in her district. Now, in Minneapolis, I haven't been out there on the ground for this, but it's the same thing, that basically I've seen pictures, huge amounts of volunteers for Ginger Jensen's campaign.
Because the Democrats sit and back and say, oh, buy that. We're going to win anyway. We're just going to win. They just
part
assume.
Of it. Yep, that's part of it.
Nah,
yep.
No, you see what happened with the presidential election.
Well, that's what they're doing with this is they're the Republicans, actually, and Democrats in power are like Keith Ellison is on the same line. He's considered a progressive Democrat by some. He is now part of the same attack that the Republicans are doing through their PAC money and through other stuff against Ginger Jensen. So that the corporate parties have lined up together to attack. And they did last time we ran a candidate in, sorry, I have a technical problem here. My headphone thing. All right. I guess that's the best I can hope for. All right. Anyway, we ran a candidate named Ty Moore, 2013. In a ward, the ninth ward, I believe it was, in Minneapolis. He came within 200 votes of winning. But what happened at the last minute is Al Franken and all these other big-name Democrats came in with big money and did a TV ads and stuff and were able to squeak out the election. And when 15 was going to be on the ballot, $15 minimum wage was going to be on the ballot because the Democrats didn't support it in Minneapolis. And they dominate the city council. We had enough support, and we was polling at over 60%. To go to a referendum, and the Democrats got together with the Republican judges and they squashed the referendum.
Whatever happened in 2014 when we encountered Baker?
Which one? Oh, Baker.
Remember November?
Yeah. Well, nothing.
What I mean, was he's 3 years ago?
Yeah, he said right to our face, you were there. He said, I think the minimum wage is fine.
It's fine the way it is.
We were campaigning for 15.
No, it isn't for us.
Yeah,
sir.
No, a lot of things aren't fine. Well, he's privatizing the hell out of the MBTA. And what angers me is the MBTA unions are fighting, but not really effectively, not really that hard as they should. But where's the rest of the labor movement? I don't see it. Maybe there's been a symbolic protest somewhere that I wasn't at where there was other unions at. But, you know, if Baker's attacking one of the strongest unions in the city, you know, the MBTA drive, there's more than one union representing the workers there. Where's the rest of the labor? This should be like a big cause, a big public cause. You try to destroy the best job somebody can get, probably in Boston, the average person, you know, and it's also going to hurt quality. It already has, actually. One of the things they privatized has been proven already to be less efficient.
The Silver Line.
No, something about counting. I don't remember what it was. It came out recently. I don't remember what function it was. A Silver Line's a joke anyway. We should tell our listeners about, because we have a lot of out-of-state listeners, and we're talking a little bit about local stuff here, but, you know, you want to hear about Boston. if this town ever, they were trying to get the Olympics, that would have been the death of Boston. They would have collapsed.
Because New York City had the same transportation system we do.
Well, look what's happening in New York. New York is already gridlocked right now. The subway's in a crisis right now. A liberal Democrat in power, Bill de Blasio, right? He was touted as a true progressive, blah, blah, blah. And everybody out there in New York knows, down there or whatever, knows that that's not true now. He's completely been mainstreamed, and he always was, really. And one of the things they're going to get him on, don't be surprised to see a Republican back in power in New York, because Republican won't do anything any better, but they're getting him on the subway. I mean, there's just like the gridlock of subway.
It's the reaction now that comes out of that
material problem.
He's not too progressive. Let's go now.
Most people don't even think clearly about those terms. It's going to be the subway sucks worse under de Blasio than it did under Bloomberg, which is a joke. Bloomberg's a evil, rich, but that's true. It is worse. People often vote in those kind of elections, they vote for material things, but there's more to it than that. But anyway, that's basically one of the things happening. But what I was going to say was Boston is a joke in terms of the transportation system. It's a complete joke. They refuse to expand it. Look at the Green Line extension. That may go through, but it's been delayed now decades, because that was court mandated back in the 90s,
That's going to go through my neighborhood, and I've heard some places are going to be bought to be torn down for that line.
Sure.
Yeah.
If it happens. But, and I hope it does happen. I don't want to see places torn down, but I mean, I hope it happens. But they're just any major improvement is just not done, you know? Like they were going to put the Green Line back in Jamaica Plain, and a bunch of businesses just said, it'll hurt our parking situation, you know? And they used to have that for decades. Like, remember the Green Line used to run through, yeah, on Center Street. You know, you can still see the tracks, I believe.
Oh my, that was a long time. It went from had to be in the '80s. Before I got here.
Heath Street, Heath Street to Center Street. There was no stopping it. Heath Street was not the final stop, and it would go all the way to Forest Hills.
I always thought of Jackson Square.
Green Line all the way to Green Line all the way to Green Line all the way to Forest Hills. Think of that, and that was very convenient. It was a trolley. It was great. Everyone rode it. They got rid of it. People didn't want it to be gotten rid of. They got rid of it. People wanted it back. The businesses ruled the day like they always do. The Democrats are bought and paid for in the pocket of big business, small businesses too. And that was that, right? My point is that it just will not improve this subway system in any real way. You know, I mean, it will happen in dribs and drabs, but it'll be fights. Yeah. And in fact, the only reason they're doing that extension is because of fights.
Accessibility to that new Wing Gamble Casino that's coming up.
Yeah.
In 2019.
Yeah. So anyway, the point is that you have places where there's these demands are, you know, coming, against gentrification, against for rent control, a lot of the older demands of, you know, the destruction of city services and so on are coming up in this campaign that we're doing in Minneapolis, that the Jensen campaign, Social Alternative Members, is running. And the big money, both Republican and Democrat, is coming down hard. And yet there's a chance, it's not definite, there's a chance that the Jensen campaign could win, because also what you get is volunteers, and you get... you also get money coming in from, you know, little, like the average donation is like $25 or less or something like that, or 27 or something. I forget the exact number, but it's a low number, and it's turned out to be the best fundraiser outside of the PACs of any of the candidates. Best fundraising outside of any of the candidates has been the Ginger Jensen campaign. So that's where one of the things I was leading up to with that convoluted explanation. But anyway, so the elections here in this area, the elections on out there are this Tuesday. There'll be a lot of news after that. In the corporate media, it'll all be about did Democrats win or not. But where we're talking about here is keep an eye out to see if socialists win or not, if any independents win or not. And especially a socialist running for city council in Minneapolis, Ginger Jensen, J-E-N-T-Z-E-N. And we hope that she wins. And it's a very logical vote if people hear about it. There's a real lack of general publicity about elections like this, you know, of these off-year elections, especially. And what the Democratic Party does, what the Republican Party does, is that they have a very clear idea of who actually goes out and votes. They spend a lot of money figuring this out, and they target those people, give them rise to the polls, do all that kind of stuff. The only hope for a socialist campaign or Ginger Jet, like Shama in Seattle or Ginger Jet, is to really break through that old boy network, so to speak, that old network of primarily older voters that are manipulated basically by the two corporate parties, and to get to the place where the average person can actually hear about the election and hear about some of the issues. And the way that happened in Seattle was that $15 minimum wage issue for Shama Sawant back in 2013 and in the subsequent re-election was big. In the re-election, it was housing issues, but still remembering of 15. We're not sure how many people remember that Ginger was the director of the 15 Now movement in Minneapolis, because the Democrats at the last minute, after the another referendum was going to come around, they said, a bunch of them said, we're for it, we're okay, because they were seeing the polling data, even after they squashed the referendum, was so high. So they supported it. Now they're claiming they supported 15. So people that voted against it, people that didn't do any work for it, are now saying they supported 15 and kind of trying to bury the idea that Ginger, they took credit for it. Yeah. But what I mentioned earlier about Shama running is Shama being in office, Shama Sawant, is that the reason socialists are interested in, or I'd say good socialists, or, you know, socialists interested in changing things fundamentally, the reason they bother with electoral politics that are basically dominated by big business, by the big corporations, big money, is that you can use the campaigns as a way to organize. You can use the platform if you get elected, which is really hard. You can use it as an organizing platform. And Shama Sawan and Social Alternative have done that very effectively out in Seattle on a number of issues. And recently there's a whole big a bunch of issues put together under the title of Affordable Seattle. That's a campaign that's being done now in Seattle, being led by Shama Sawan, Social Alternative. There are many other groups involved. And part of that campaign is a thing that just happened where Seattle, even though it's the 22nd largest city in the country, has the like top, was in the top three as far as homelessness goes, maybe second or something like that. And so what this city is doing, dominated by Democrats, is very little for homelessness. In fact, it was basically Shama coming in and in her second term was able to fight for, they wanted to construct a new headquarters for the cops in Seattle, brand new spiffy headquarters, which is going to cost, I think it was $49 million or $100 million or something like that. And that became known as the Bunker Buster campaign in terms of being against it. And that was led by different groups, including Social Alternative and Shama. And it was successful. And part of the settlement was to get $29 million of that money that had been earmarked for that to go, that was successfully stopping the bunker being built, take $29 million, have that go to housing. And that was supposed to build 1,000 houses. So that's in the works. And that's a victory. That's great. Not nearly enough. Yeah. So you go around Seattle, and I've been there, and you can see...
Not like England in the 80s, where it had all these councils just getting the housing situation.
Before Thatcher, yeah. Before, yeah, 70s more in the 80s, yeah.
Before Snatcher, Thatcher, wasn't yeah. it?
The milk snatcher. Thatcher, the milk snatcher. Because the first thing Thatcher did was get rid of milk, free milk for the school kids. Yay. A lot like Trump, you know. But, yeah, I hear this person yesterday. I saw them on the news saying, I've been through many elections. I've never seen anything like Trump. And I'm like... Yeah, Trump is nastier, certainly, than probably any president that I'm aware of. But it's not all about delivery. You know, Reagan, who would smile, did worse things, you know, so far. Berlusconi, if you want to take it internationally, Berlusconi in Italy, how the heck did they elect such a clown two or three times in Italy? How did Sarkozy in France get elected? You know, how did Reagan or Bush Jr. get elected? You know what I mean? And also there's a more general point of, well, do you really want a, does it really matter if you have a intelligent, slick person screwing you over and ruining your future and possibly destroying the planet in terms of few people living here with global warming or nuclear war or whatever? Does it matter if they do that with their most articulate, intelligent representatives, the big, you know, the ruling class? Mm-hmm. Or should they do it with buffoons that have a populist message of some sort? You know, to me, they're both equally bad. You yeah. know,
and whether this it's right, scarier because he's just yeah. like, let's take him out, like the whole no, thing.
No, scary.
North Korea.
Trump is scary. Trump I'm is like, evil. Trump is bad.
The guy tried to negotiate, and he's like, come back. Trump. There's no reason yeah, we're yeah. gonna nuke him. Yeah. I'm like,
hey, I was gonna get to that. We're organizing we're helping to organize demonstrations nationwide against Trump. Under 1 year is enough. With Socialist Students, Socialist Alternative, and Millennials for Revolution, which is a group that used to be Millennials for Sanders. These will be in some cities, you know, noticeable, in others maybe not so noticeable, because, you know, there's a lot of people that would prefer to whine about Trump than get out in the streets and do something. I'm not saying you're like that. I'm saying, like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that have illusions of the Democrats, think, oh, if we just elect Democrats, things will be okay. Well, when's the last time a Democrat reversed the what the Republicans put in play? When Reagan passed the big tax cuts for big business, did the Democrats get in and erase that when they had control over this over the Congress and presidency?
No.
They added to it. Clinton ended up adding to the tax cuts for big corporations. When's the last time you ever see Democrats come in and reverse Republican proposals that were very harmful? Never, because they like them, fundamentally like them. Right now with the tax thing, and if you don't believe me, if someone out there is a real liberal Democrat and is just fuming at me for daring to criticize the Democrats, just pay attention to this tax thing very carefully. This happened just before I came to the show. There was the talking head show Washington Week or something on some channel, and they had a liberal on who was saying, well, the problem here, blah, blah, I forget who she was talking to. Problem here, Mr. Suit, is that the Democrats are fundamentally for lowering the tax rate on the corporations. And she's right. They are. You'll notice when they criticize this tax bill, and some of them are, right? Some Democrats are really criticizing it. They're not going after that part of it. They're not talking about that part of it, right? Because they think a 34% tax on big corporations, which is an effective tax rate of 17% and falling, by the way. Effective meaning what actually gets collected. And big corporations not paying anything often. They think that's okay. And they're going to actually make that worse for us. You know what I mean? And the real money in society is not among the super rich. That is real money. That's huge. But the real money is the corporations. They have real money, big, huge amounts of money, and often in cash, by the way. If they can't find something to put something that they think is lucrative in terms of investing in, they'll just sit on the cash until they find their next target, their next takeover or whatever. And so you have basically Republicans and Democrats, they're going to agree to some sort of tax bill, probably. It's not, I have to hedge my bets. I mean, the whole thing could fall apart, which I hope it does. But there's a chance they could have a bipartisan agreement on tax, what they want to call reform, which is really taxation against working people, really, when you get right down to it. And that's what they want to pass. So they're focusing on things like the estate tax and getting rid of that, how horrible what a gift that is for a tiny, tiny percentage of the super rich. And that's correct. That's a horrible thing. But you should be focusing also, or more so even, on the corporate tax rate. It shouldn't just be 34%. It should be 50%. It should be 60%. They should be taken under public ownership, ultimately, you know? But even in terms of going towards that, in terms of progressive taxation of the corporations, it's been going backwards, you know? And
what was the percentage?
And the Democrats don't come in and raise the corporate tax rate.
What was the percent? It was 91, right?
I don't know. No, that was for personal income. The personal income tax rate would blow most people's minds if that was ever brought up by the corporate media in a clear way. That during the post-war upswing, during the like Eisenhower administration, mm-hmm. for example,
after Republican
administration, there was a 90%, I believe, maybe more, tax rate on the super rich. Go look it up if you don't believe me. Now, why that's important is because you probably
repeat that number again, Jeff, because people didn't hear that.
90%,
or somebody just had a heart attack.
At least 90% tax rate on the super rich in the United States in the post-war upswing during, for example, the Eisenhower
administration. And it was still rich.
Oh, well, here's the real heart attack, and I hope some of you have it, by the way. Not too serious.
You just disrupted some brunches here.
Yeah, I know. Put down the brunch fork and let's go at it. Who started to reverse that? What president started to reverse that large taxation?
Ike?
Kennedy. Kennedy, yep. Liberal icon. Started to chop away at the big corporate, tax rates on the rich. And that continued. Carter also cut taxes, you know, on the rich. And it goes on and on. It's counterintuitive to what we're taught. You know, the lesser evil turns out not to be the lesser evil at a given moment, you know. That doesn't mean the Republicans are ever the lesser evil, but I'm saying the Democrats cemented as the lesser evil oftentimes are not the lesser evil, especially right now on a municipal level, getting back to Shama Sawant. And what's happening now as part of Affordable Seattle is putting pressure on the city to stop these homeless sweeps. Like what I started to say earlier was that if you go to Seattle, which I've done, you basically find these... you basically find homeless encampments kind of all over the place. It's not that hard to find. I don't want to exaggerate. They're not on every street corner or whatever, but they're not hard to find. They're more visible than in other cities.
What is that? Basically all these homeless people's...
Tents. Basically, you see tents. Mm-hmm. You see a collection of people trying to survive on the street.
Kind of like the Depression when...
Yeah, Hoovervilles. But less than that, but there, you know. Groups like... Real Change, Sharon, Nicholsville, Housing for All, Sea Camp Out, this whole list of housing activist groups, Transit Riders Union, even a real one, Socialist Alternative, People's Party, many other organizations, they all got together, and we were a big part of this in Socialist Alternative, to have a rally at City Hall, but an all-night rally, a 4.5-hour public hearing, an all-night rally in Seattle, and a camp out inside City Hall. And a die-in the next morning. And one reason they did the die-in thing, which I know sounds like, you know, the guerrilla theater thing that might sound a little tired to some people, but guess how many people have died so far this year on the streets of Seattle, how many homeless people?
In the thousands.
No, not thousands. 66, including a baby. So this is high because usually it's not thousands dying. People are in the shelters and stuff. But over time, if you map it out, it can get into the thousands. But this is so far this year. So, and what has been visible in Seattle is these sweeps of the police where they just go through and, you know, toss the people out and they got nowhere to go. So they just set up somewhere else. But it's very, they lose stuff. They get hurt. They get arrested. Whatever. At the same time, they're doing these anti-sweep, stop the sweeps, tax big business to fund housing and services, which is the slogan we're putting forward. We're trying to put forward a people's budget at the same time in Seattle. And it's having an effect, you know, in terms of the example I gave with the bunker buster, the bunker being stopped and the police bunker being stopped and the money going towards housing, but it's not enough. And this is a tactic that we've used constantly in Seattle. Once Sharma got elected, we call public hearings and we mobilize. If we're in a coalition or whatever, we mobilize to get as many people as we can in City Hall. So it's not just, you know, the usual stuff. It's like city council hearings where there aren't that many people there. I don't know if you ever go to those things, but they're not usually not that very many people there. And so consistently we're getting like 100, 200 or more people at special City Hall meetings about special issues, usually to do with $15 minimum wage or housing or something. And the Democrats got so sick of it, they tried to sue us and say, you can't, they tried to go to a court and get a ruling against, suing might be the wrong word, sorry, they were trying to get a court, get a ruling against having people go to City Hall. I know that sounds, City Hall's supposed to be the people's place. I know that sounds funny, but they actually tried that.
It's against the assembly.
You got that old moldy Fourth Amendment or First Amendment and all that stuff about freedom of assembly and speech and all that. Yeah, who cares, right? So,
this is where Lenin comes out with the whole anti-parliament.
There's severe limits to it.
You know, hypocrites like.
Yeah. But in this case, what happened was it started to become a PR nightmare. People were hearing like, "What? They're going to court to stop people going to City Hall, but what? How can they do that? You know, that kind of thing." That was getting like so high.
That's like me going to City Hall in Cambridge and say, "Stop!
Yeah, don't
anyone
don't,
but you."
Right? Exactly. So that got out there, and it just didn't make any sense to anybody. So even the courts, which were horrible out there on other issues. We're like, nah, we don't think this one's gonna. okay, next. You know, they just shoved it aside, and it never went through. And so still to this day, and I'm using this as an example, they brought out the left there, including Social Alternative, including Shama Sawant, as a city councilor, were able to mobilize hundreds of people out to put pressure to stop the sweeps on the homelessness and so on. That has to happen in other places. And when the political energy of progressive people and the left gets channeled into the Democratic Party, it dies.
It's the graveyard.
It's the graveyard. And you're not going to see that kind of mobilization, that kind of energy. You just won't. And
that's what happened with the Communist Party in the 30s. Yep. Oh, vote Democrat.
Yep, that's right. And there was a lot of pressure on the Communist Party in the 30s, again, even within the Communist Party and around it. People were saying, you know, this. What are you talking about? You know, all these horrible things are happening. Like, I don't know if you, speaking of books, I'm reading a book about the Memorial Day Massacre in 1937.